one of the all-time favorite shows.
Hello, and welcome to Because You're Home. We are on episode 67.
Getting closer to 69, y'all.
Emer's living for the day.
Living for
it. This week we decided, because I don't think anyone, I've mentioned this in the last episode as well, I don't think anyone is really over the fact that we're fully back to work. Or actually, do you know what? It's more that I'm kind of so back to work that it's like nothing ever happened. Ever.
Yeah.
You
never went away. Christmas never happened.
Never happened. Never happened. Although this year in Ireland, we are getting an extra bank holiday. So that's going to be fun.
Do you know what? Apparently, though, in the bloody HSE, is that it's going to be a public holiday, not a bank holiday, and I might have to stay in and work that day if my doctor holds a clinic.
Boo.
I am steaming, tamping, fuming.
Boo. That's upsetting. Will you get the bonus?
Probably not, but I might be able to get the day back in lieu. But that just means the world and its mother, well, in Ireland, is off and I'm in work.
Yeah, well, only thing I'll say is there's a lot of industries that will be in.
Yeah, actually there will.
Not mine.
Son of a bitch.
This will be our last episode because we're not And actually, as we're talking there, my phone just went off. But is it my normal phone or is it my work phone? It was my work phone, people.
Why the hell is your work phone on?
Oh, we keep it on the whole time, but I put it on silent there.
Jesus.
So this week we are looking at horror workplace movies. Movies that happened in the workplace. So we all know that, look, not everybody, there's that saying of like, you know, do something you love and you'll never work a day in your life, which I think is fantastic. I aspire to it. I really love where I work. I really love my job. I love the people I work with. But if somebody turned around and was like, here's a load of money, you don't have to work again, I'd be like, yeah.
Me, okay. Emer-shaped hole in the wall. I'd be fucking gone.
And like, I would definitely, people turn around, they're like, I'd have to work. I'd have to do something.
And I'm not like, in the same place though.
I could do something. It just wouldn't be work.
Oh yeah, like I'd like to do something else, like just to occupy my time. It doesn't necessarily have to be the job I was doing.
No. And I like say that with genuinely working in one of the nicest places ever. And
just, well done. I mean, fair play to you.
Yeah, I looked out. I really did. Fully aware of how lucky I am with my job and everything. But yeah, you can hear some really like horror stories from work, like from, you know, what you call it, like haunted hotels, or like, God, I was thinking as well, I was like, what would have been kind of standout ones from work days and stuff? And I was thinking, imagine, like, I've never thought of it from this lens. Do you remember when that guy went into the cinema in America and he was dressed as the Joker?
Yes.
Imagine having been the staff that day as well.
Yeah, like I sold him that ticket, you know.
And like down to just days where you're just having a shit day, you're hungover, you don't want to be there. Work can be a bit of a horror. And I had a look into a couple of like terrible working days, and I didn't know that the phrase going postal, which means like just going really fucking mad and being really angry, is actually because of a workplace-based murder. So on the 20th of August 1986, in the event that coined the term going postal, United States Postal Service worker Patrick Henry Sherrill shot a total of 20 co-workers before killing himself. 14 victims died in this attack, which is still the deadliest among incidents of workplace violence in the United States. And I got that from thehigginsfirm.com, which is trial and injury lawyers.
Wow, random to be on that website.
And I tell you, it's the top 10 workplace, 10 worst workplace homicides in US history. Are you really safe in the workplace?
Don't think so.
Think you are?
No. And they're 98% you.
Circus success rate as well. Get a lawyer who gets results. Contact them now.
There's no time to delay, people.
2121 people. The free consultation and all.
Looking after y'all.
If Higgins Firm wants to get in touch and sponsor.
Yes. They can get some clients through people who are listening.
Really, if we are to talk about the workplace horror things that happened here, they might get some ideas and they might be able to get in touch with our fictional characters and help them. Is fictional a word?
It is now.
It is now. Ah, lovely. So, Emer, we were talking about this beforehand and you were saying you had a story to do a going
poster. Yeah, I was waiting for an opening. So, no, not in a bad way. I was like, I didn't want to interrupt you because it was also when you're talking about a murder, I was like, I don't want to be like, going postal reminds me so much. Yeah, so when I first started college, I was the tender age of 17, turning 18. And I was around like a whole load of people I obviously never met before. I went from a small secondary school to a big ass college in Dublin.
Yeah.
And you know, they're like, my jokes can really hit or miss. Like, it's, I can have a sense of humor that can just be maybe a bit too weird. And I can't remember what the buildup was, but I just remember on two occasions my punchline going like just falling flat. So I can't remember what I was talking about, but I was talking about to these two guys. I was like trying to impress, and I said something about going postal, only for the guy to turn around and be like, my dad's a postman. And he did not appreciate the joke. And I was like, ha, 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 oops.
That guy needs to get a life.
Well, now you might regret that for the second person, because 2 weeks later, I just met my now husband, Chris, and I tried the exact same joke. And lo and behold, his dad, too, was a postman. However, I knew he was for keeps because he wasn't like disgusted with me after the joke.
Can you share the joke? Like, is it shareable?
I can't remember. Truly, it's like, I feel like as if I might have like blocked it from my memory. All I remember is like trying the same joke with two different people, alienating myself from one guy and marrying the second guy.
Well, look.
So you see, a good joke can make or break a relationship.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And it's like, you know, like when you're trying to like talk to someone brand new and you don't know them and you just, you know, you're trying to impress them, especially like you're trying to either get like a new friend or potential, you know, like go on a date with someone. And I was like in the big smoke. And basically, if you're not from Dublin, you're seen as like a country girl. So I was like trying to impress with my sense of humor, and holy shit. Yeah. Bombed.
That didn't go well.
No.
That's all right. Yep. I feel the first guy just needed to lighten up. Unless his dad was a postman who died while on service, I feel maybe he needed to.
Yeah, he got posted to up to the big sky.
Yeah, see you later.
First class delivery, special package.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I feel the other guy was...
Yeah. Do you ever get one of those where like, where are they now?
Where are they now?
I don't know. I can't remember his name.
He's a postman. Maybe he's a listener. Are you the person? Severely.
Back in 2005, in possibly a history class, did I make you feel uncomfortable?
That's a totally different question.
Oh yeah, I get like 10 people back on, I can finally talk about this.
Like in Mean Girls, when they're like, raise your hand if you've ever been personally victimized by Regina George, and like all the teachers put up their hand.
You don't mean it. Come on. Put your hand down.
So Emer, what was your first office, not office space, but workplace?
Yeah, so we were like, because we were originally going to start this like office placed HAR, and there is like, there's the Belco experiment, like there are a few office based ones, but I don't think either one of us actually decided to stick with it. And we just loosely stuck her in workplace environments. So my one is even a bit of a stretch from that, where I did the 2006 film Severance, which is on a team building work trip to Eastern Europe, to Bulgaria, I think it was, or Slovakia, Serbia. Jesus Christ, Emer. But basically, I had been meaning to watch this film, and any British person will know of Danny Dyer, and he's now in EastEnders, and I love him. I think he's hilarious, and he's so freaking young in this, because like I said, it's 2006. I'd say he's in his early 20s. So this film is, it's not as good as I thought it was going to be. It was, because like I said, when I was looking into it, it's very much so taking advantage of the Eastern European exploitation films like your Hostels at the time.
Yeah.
Where basically anybody who's not from your country is a psychopath.
Okay.
But like not everybody, but basically it's directed by Christopher Smith, and he had directed the 2004 film Creep. Did you watch that film with Peach Fuzz in the wolf mask?
I think I did, but I also have a very bad memory of it.
Yeah, it's more uncomfortable than my jokes. You came here for a horror podcast, people. We're not comedy. It's not written on our explanation. Or, no, not explanation. Description. There we go. Words. Words. So basically, the premise of this film is that these guys work for an American company called Palisade, and it's a weapons company. And they are meeting up in some luxury lodge to do team building exercises. And I think it's also a part of their buying more weapons or something like that. But and it's all very cliched characters. You got some Americans in on it, and then the rest are all British. And you've got like, it's almost like a mixture of the British slash American Office, like your real cliched characters of some guy who's like the safety person, and he's got wearing like a compass. And then you've got your boss, he's the manager, who doesn't know anything, and in the end only really like looks out for himself. There's no redeeming character to that man whatsoever. And then you have like a guy who kind of went to like a posh British college, but yet he's in that job, but it's like he hates the manager for having the job, you know, one of those like he just will tear him down any chance he can get. So the premise is that they're on the bus. Danny Dyer's already like set off the alarm in the toilet of the bus by smoking a joint. He's trying to chat up. Oh gosh, it's Laura Harris or Laura. She is, you know, the faculty.
Yeah.
And the girl who ended up being the head alien. Yeah. Laura Harris, yes. So she plays Maggie, and basically everyone knows Maggie, and Danny Dyer's character Steve is like trying to impress her. He eats like a bunch of magic mushrooms, and she's like, how do you know that they're not just regular mushrooms? And he's like, oh, like I sold them to me and it's legit. And it was just, he ends up having like this for the opening, not the opening, but like with the first half hour, like this really big trippy scene. And but anyway, so they're on the bus, and then there is a tree on the road. And so the bus driver, he's Serbian, and he doesn't really speak much English. And he's just saying like, I'm not going. And the manager's like trying to look real important by saying, no, you will drive. I don't care what you're saying. I basically like, I own you. And so he just kicks everyone off the bus and drives away. And they could have still walked on the main road, but of course this boss is like, we're going to walk this way and we'll make it to the lodge. And it turns out that there are a bunch of soldiers who were in Serbia from like the 90s with the fall of the Communist Party, and they just, they liked killing a little bit too much. And instead of like going home to their own native countries or even just back to their homes, they decided to stay on in that area in the woods, and like they've like set up landmines all over the place. And the ironic thing is it's all the weapons, the Palisade, were like basically selling or getting from that country, okay. Getting manufactured from the country. Yeah. So it's like they're being killed off by their own weapons. So like not a lot happens for the first era. They come to this, like, it's, they think it's the lodge. And I was like, this is the lodge. This must be the lodge. It's just some like run down big house. And so they stay there for the night because they're like, well, look, we've nowhere else to go. And then some people like see people looking at them. And it turns out like they're kind of like, the soldiers are starting to like creep in and stalk around them. And then, so some people are like, look, I'm not staying here. We're going back. We're going to find the bus. We're going to just go back to the original hotel. And this is when shit starts to go real, because some of the other people were like, no, we're still going to do a team building exercise. So they play paintball. And then there's like real soldiers around, but they're playing paintball. And so it's kind of like funny where he's like, I shot you. No, I shot you. And then it turns out that that was nobody from the teams. It was actually one of the soldiers who's been stalking them. And one of the guys, the super safety guy, gets his leg caught in a bear trap and ends up losing his leg. And so then they also see that there's bear traps everywhere and there's traps set around the place. So they manage to get back onto the bus crashes, and they have to go back to the lodge. And that's basically when all hell breaks loose. The soldiers start coming in, and they're like, they take some guy down and carve in on his chest the company symbol for Palisade, and that kills him.
Never good.
And
then, never good. Yeah, that's no, never a good thing.
No, it's not. Like, no. And that scene where they were cutting into your man's chest, like, Chris was beside me, and he was like trying to cover his face with his laptop so he wouldn't have to see it happening behind him, because he's not one for gore, and I wouldn't be a major one either. But it really reminded me of like Hostel. It was a dark, dingy basement where this was happening in. So this is when it's just everyone starts being like, a woman is, she's set on fire, someone else is decapitated. It's just fucking chaos. But they start to fight back towards the end, and then there is a funny scene where Danny Dyer had booked, they finally, like when Steve and Maggie are running back, they actually find the actual lodge where the owner of Palisade Weapons is, with two escorts Steve had bought for himself to meet him there as a birthday present, he said. There then hits the climax where they're basically trying to fight back. They come across a huge trove of weapons, of Palisade weapons. And it was a bit of a, not a major like climactic ending. It was like, oh, it's over. Like no major things happen in it. Like I said, it was, I really wanted more from it.
Yeah.
It
was pretty disappointing when you're kind of really looking forward to seeing something, and then you sit down, you're like, okay, I'm going to put the effort in here, and then it's just about shit.
Yeah, because like I like British comedy horrors, like I love comedy horrors, but I always find that the Brits, like with their dry wit, it's always really good. But it was just all right. But they, like, once they hit the gore, they hit the gore, and not like it's crazy bad, but it was just a bit like, it just felt like it didn't feel right in the film. I suppose that was the horror side to it, but the comedy was so like a black comedy kind of thing that
yeah
and I feel like Danny Dyer was there because he does comedy well, and it was like, get him in this, even though I don't feel like as if he should be in this film. It's good. I wouldn't really push people to watch it unless you really wanted to give it a go. Okay. It's very dated, even by like what they were, like, I just feel like as if it's, those films have been and gone after like your original Saw films and your first Hostel film. Yeah. Like that was of its time.
Yeah.
But also, I also feel like as if you had to go on a work holiday, no. Two, a fucking team building one with stupid games, like that is a horror film all of itself. But then to three, have a load of ex-soldiers who just are out to kill people, I'm like,
pretty fucking terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, not for me. The experience or, yeah, no, like the film was just all right. So, I mean, watch it if you want to, but I'm not necessarily recommending it.
Okay. Okay. So definitely a work trip you don't want to be on.
Yeah. No, no. I'm all right.
Yeah, it's like, no, thank you. Yeah, thank you. From a work trip that you don't want to be on to a remote working, I suppose, kind of.
Very remote.
Out of this world.
Way.
So I watched Alien, Ridley Scott's Alien. And I have actually never seen this, which I think is on one hand surprising, but on another hand not surprising. I would always, sci-fi wouldn't be massively my thing, or so I thought. Definitely doing this podcast, I have been surprised by the amount of zombie movies I have actually enjoyed. And I really liked this. I kind of thought it was going to be very similar to The Thing. I don't know why, I just kind of presumed it was very similar. And I'm not a massive The Thing fan, so I was kind of going into this a little bit dubious, thinking I knew it all, which I definitely didn't. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. I obviously knew that Sigourney Weaver was in this movie, but I really liked the whole cast. Was very Yeah, I was really surprised, like pleasantly surprised by the whole cast. Loved all of them. Was delighted to see Veronica Cartwright. I am absolutely obsessed with her since seeing her in Witches of Eastwick 10,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. I thought she was amazing in that. And when I saw her in this, I was like, oh, she's so cute. Love her. So basically, in a near distant future, there is a commercial spaceship crew who are on, like, it's not even particularly a mission because it's just their job. They're on a job and they're on their way home, and they get a signal from something, which is like a distress call. They have, like, who I imagine in this sense is their manager. They call her mother. Which I kind of felt found a bit unnerving. I was like, this is weird. They kept calling her mother. They were like, what's his mother?
Yeah.
Like, well, turns out. So they think they're quite close to home. Turns out that they're actually not. They're a little bit off course. And it's because mother has put them off course, and that the company can do this if there's a certain reason, if there's kind of extenuating circumstances. And there were extenuating circumstances in this case, which was that they could hear almost like an SOS. I think they say something like it's a two stop and a stop kind of signal that's coming through. So they go and they try and investigate this. One of the guys goes out, or two of them go out to investigate this, and something latches onto his face, and then they're coming back into the spaceship and they're all like, let us in the spaceship. In fairness, Ripley, Sigourney Weaver, is like, no, that's against company guidelines. You need to actually like quarantine for 24 hours. If it was now, they'd be like, absolutely no way, blase, not happening, quarantine, 14 days, see you later. If something happens, it happens. I'm sorry, expose yourself. So she wants to go with their hard line of, look, I'm really sorry if you were in this position, you wouldn't open the door either. She has to quarantine for 24 hours so that we know that whatever is there doesn't come into the ship and doesn't kind of kill us all or infect us all, and we all die, and then our kind of whole work has been for nothing, or the mission has been for nothing, or we arrive back to Earth with like this deadly virus or this like something. And if it's a good thing in 24 hours, sure, we'll be coming back here. It's all good. In fairness, I can see where she's coming from in the sense that we need to keep to company guidelines. Personally, think she's being a bit of a dick. I would have opened the door because it's my friend and we would have all been fucked. But I would have felt good in the knowledge that I helped a friend and didn't leave the friend and my two other work colleagues out in the dust. Now, in fairness, they're still on the spaceship. They're just not in with everybody else. So there's another person, there's a couple of other people on the spaceship at the time, and they're kind of like, open the fucking door. And Ripley is like, absolutely not. And then Ash, who is played by Ian Holm, or Holm, who you will recognize as Bilbo fucking Baggins.
Yes.
He let them in. And I was like, I like this dude. He's a good guy. I get it. Of course they're going to let them in. So once they get them in, it is Lambert and Dallas, and they get everybody in, and Kane has a big sucker on his face, and it's that hugger that everyone who has seen or hasn't seen Alien recognizes. It's one of those movies that even if you haven't seen it, you have seen the most unusual, like the shocking part of it. You've also seen Alien, you've seen the face hugger, like all of those things you're going to instantly recognize. And like, I hadn't seen this movie, but I knew all those things. Even knew the hairstyle of Ripley. You know, it's just one of those very recognizable movies that you will see. So they do a couple of different tests, and they try and kind of cut off the alien. And then when they cut into the alien, it's almost like acid blood that the alien has. And they're like, wow, this is a really cool defense mechanism, because the more you try to kill it, the more you kind of get fucked up, which actually is, in fairness. You're kind of like, cool. Survival there, not a good thing for the people there, and definitely not a good thing for the guy who's like, you know, fucking faced with it. So a number of things happen. Ripley's really upset that, you know, Ash let him in, shouldn't have let him in, but yeah, there's this whole thing of like, you know, we have to, you know, let him in. He's our friend, he's our colleague. They're talking. I really like the cast. I really like the characters. There was like people there that were like a person in the office who's definitely kind of sticks to the rules. And I could tell you, when I was in hospitality, I was that person. And it's the reason why I got out of hospitality, because I was boring. And then there was the people who were just there. It's their job. They have the crack. They're good crack people. And they have that little bit of kind of comic relief through the movie as well. And they all seem to be a really good team as well together. So then they get a phone call, not a phone call, over the walkie-talkie. They're like, hey, Dallas, come up. You need to see Kane. And they're like, is he any better? And they're like, no, just come up and see him. I was expecting him to be like mauled or something. And they go up and like, the hugger's off the face and he's like chatting away and it's great. And they're all like, hallelujah. Like, the hugger's dead. Kane's okay. Let's go have some grub. And at one stage as well, Ash, Ripley and Dallas are looking at the dead hugger. And they're like poking it, and like Ash is like, oh, just be careful. And they're poking it like clang. It's like tentacle-y things. And then they're like, oh my God. And they're like, look, it's just a reflex. It's absolutely fine. But to do that, it was like, they had like four oysters, like a kidney of some sort, I think, some sort of organ as well, like an animal's organ. And they had to do all of those scenes quite quickly because under the really, really harsh light of set light, it could get quite smelly and they would rot quite quickly. You know, so that's always fun. So later on they decide that they're going to have a dinner, and Kane is there and he's eating away, and you can kind of see that Dallas is like, oh, there's something going on here. It's a bit strange. And Brett and Parker, who are kind of our like comedic, like our comedy break every so often, they're chatting away and like they're all having a lovely time. And then Kane starts to like choke and he's like, bleh. They're all like, it's okay, don't worry. And they like flip him over, they put him on his back and he's like choking and he's like real like, they're trying to shove something in his mouth so that he bites down on that and doesn't bite off his tongue. They don't really get it in, he spits it out. And then in fairness, at one stage he's really like, bleh, bleh, and he's like his tongue everywhere. And I'm like, Jesus, he's gonna bite his tongue off. I was like, wow, I'm fully immersed in this. And then the scene that everybody has seen, even if you have not seen this movie. And you can hear the gurgle in the tummy. And then something kind of goes, and like, it doesn't quite come through, but there's a bit of blood. And there's blood all over his top. And then he's like writhing around again. He's like, oh my God, oh, there's something inside my head. Oh. And then just like, poo! And it's like a little thing comes out. And it's like got razor sharp teeth. And it's got a little like penis head. And it's got a little tail. And it's like a little slug. And it's like, and there's like blood everywhere. And everyone's like, fuck. And they're just looking at it. And your man Parker is there. And he's like, I'm going to kill you with whatever he has. And Ash is like, no, don't. Because, you know, the whole acid blood, not a great thing. Which is like, you're like, but thinking, Ash, fair play to you. And then it like squids off. It just like speeds off and goes. So the rest of the movie is kind of trying to, you know, catch the thing. And get it. And like capture it, and they're going to put it into this other part of the spaceship, and they're going to put that into space, and they're going to blow it up, and they'll blow up this alien entity. So they go looking, Ripley, Brett, and Parker go looking for an alien. They find something, and it's a cat, and it's so cute. And he's running around, and then it goes, Kane goes to look for the cat, and he's trying to find this cat so that the alien doesn't get to it, or it's not killed in the whole thing of, is that a cat, is it an alien, look, they'll kill it either way, it's fine. And there's a great scene where Brett is going up to him and he's like, here, kitty, kitty, kitty. And Kitty's like, hey, you're my friend. He's about to come out. And then the aliens are behind him. Now, in the scene, like a couple of scenes and a couple of like minutes really between this and when they saw the tiny little alien, this alien has grown and grown quite a bit. Like, it's like the evolution of this alien is quite astonishing. And the cat starts to hiss and it starts to move back. So what they did to actually make this happen during the filming of it was they put a screen down and this cat was there, and I think his name was Lawrence or something like that, and they had on the other side of the screen a German Shepherd.
Oh.
Screen down, and that was fine. And they were like, here, kitty, kitty, and the kitty's coming up. And then they whipped up the screen, and then the German Shepherd was there. So the cat is actually properly reacting to this German Shepherd and starts hissing at the German Shepherd and then starts to back away and is like, no, and moves away. And then it goes into this whole thing of it's going to try, they're trying to at the alien, they're trying to save each other. And I feel that this movie is from 1979, so I feel if I like, there's obviously people like me who didn't know the ending of this, so I actually don't, I was going to say, I feel like if I talk about it I'm not going to ruin it for too many people, but because I actually didn't know it and I was kind of like, oh man, when I found out, I'm going to leave it and not say exactly what happens. But I do feel as well, without knowing what happens, you can kind of tell that the final girl is Ripley. It's Sigourney Weaver. But she does end up getting the alien into the pod. She sends it off. She blows it up in what can only just be described as the biggest like explosion I've ever seen in a film. Like, it is crazy. I don't know if that's because it's in space and that's what would happen in space, or if it's just for severe traumatic effect, which I imagine it is. But yeah, it's really good. And more happens, and like there's still aliens and stuff. Like, alien is class, everyone is class, and then it cat survives as well. So hurrah for society and humanity, and long live cat. I was delighted. I thought it was a great film. I thought it was going to be shit.
Yay!
It was really good. I really enjoyed it. And I'm not like an alien kind of film person.
I would sincerely suggest you watch Aliens. It's balls to the wall. It's brilliant.
Okay. I'm really looking forward to it. And with having watched it, I'm definitely going to watch Event Horizon quite soon as well.
Yes!
Because I'm really excited. Yeah, I was always kind of going to watch it because it was such a favorite of yours. And now I'm like, I'm really looking forward to it. And as well, this was the first R-rated movie and had merchandise and toys directed for children.
Yeah. They got that one well wrong.
A little bit of something. Like, I think as well, it really... Watching it now, it didn't feel like I was watching a movie that was made in 79, where I feel like when I watch The Thing, I know it's a really, like, it's an older movie, and it just has that feeling about it. Whereas when I watched this, I was like, I just thought it kind of aged really well. And I really, I really enjoyed it. I really liked all the actors in it. And I really liked all the characters in it. There really wasn't anything that I would... Yeah, there wasn't anything that I'd go, oh, no. Really enjoyed it. Like,
I'm delighted. I'm absolutely delighted.
Very enthusiastic thumbs up.
Yay! I'll get you to the dark side of the moon of sci-fi horror.
Oh, stop. I'm a different person from when we started. Like, zombie movies... sci-fi horror.
You wait for it. I'm going to get you to watch Iron Sky, where it's Nazis on the moon.
Oh, okay. I want a bit of zombies, and then like I'll be like, holy moly.
Yeah. Yeah. I do like a good bonkers horror movie, but I see, I'm not, like, I have watched plenty of sci-fi films, but I swear they don't hold as much interest to me as sci-fi horror does, because I think it's like that, and it's like marine horror films, you know, where they're like, it's the isolation, and the if you step out of your environment, you die from lack of oxygen.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, there's so many things that could kill you on a general day of just the danger of your job. And then there's whatever else is coming to attack you, like.
Absolutely. And similar to that, like, if somebody had told me that one of my favorite movies out of our horror, 100 of horror, would be a marine-based horror, I'd be like, you're mental. You're actually mental. Like, my top movies would have been Jacob's Ladder and the zombie ones. And, like, if you had told me that, I'd be like, yeah, okay, you're losing your mind. Go away. Leave me alone.
See, that's it. That's what I really like about this podcast, is it's pushing us out to watch completely different films.
Absolutely. I'm loving it. Loving it. That was my work-based horror, which when I told Warren, Alien was my work-based horror.
Yeah.
That's very funny and quite clever, because I suppose it is her job. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah. They might be in space, but that's their job.
It's their place. Lol.
Hey,
I'm a dickhead.
So, like, you go from a real slick, wet xenomorph to the real slick Rick, Patrick Bateman of the year 2000s.
Sorry, that was American Psycho.
Thanks. This film, I had watched it years ago, and then I rewatched it for this. And it's like, you forget just how much happens in it. It's set in, it's based off of the book by Patrick Easton, Ellis, Jesus, Seymour. I'll come back to that, his name in a second. But basically it's set in 1988 and it's got that real vibe of like Wall Street, Gordon Gekko, like greed is good. They're all like, ironically, it's not until you know it's until I watch the second time. You see them at work, yes. All that, like Patrick Bateman and his friends. You don't see them actually working. Yeah. So they work in like mergers and acquisitions and you're just like, what? Obviously like merging businesses, buying this, merging them, like acquiring businesses, merging one failing with another and da da da, da is my thing of it. But you don't see them doing anything. And it's really like about dressing well, looking well, showing your wealth off completely on the surface. And because I love his, like the way that Christian Bale does his monologue, his narration, sorry, over throughout the entire film. Like when he's in the shower and he, like, because he talks about how he does his workouts every morning and then he has his breakfast and then he has his shower and he uses all these lotions and potions. I went to the gym this morning and I went to the gym and I had my shower afterwards and it was basically like, I had to shower as quick as possible so I can go to work.
Yeah.
You know, like, and it's just like, go, go, go.
Like, fair play to you for going to the gym.
Yeah, in all honesty, I thought I was winning alone with that. So just a quick plot summary of this, because I'm not going to go into it into too much detail because there is a chance that people might not have watched it because when it came out, it was so...
I actually haven't seen it.
Yeah, and it was so... God, what's the word I'm trying to get? Like it got an the NC-17, which is like would have ruined the film. Like it's like the hard R rating. Like if you look at it on IMDb for like drug use, violence, sex, nudity, it's all severe warnings. It's bright red for all of them. Like it was so like the book got. I remember like when the book was being released. People were dropping it when they were releasing this film. Like it was written in, I think they were trying to get a script for this going or like trying to get it released as a film since 1991 and the film was made in 2000. It's directed by a woman, Mary Harron, and it is also, the screenplay is written by another woman, Genevieve Turner. So I liked that. It is not a woman-friendly film though. But at the same time, it completely takes the piss. It completely takes the piss out of the male ego and how narcissistic they are and like boys club attitude. Like it is this, like the book is very gruesome, extremely graphic. I haven't read it, but I'm curious to read it. But I don't know if I'd have the stomach for it because from what I've been reading into it is that the book, like so that they wouldn't get the severe rating, they had to cut some scenes, change it. Like they don't show the murders happening like right there, but the book goes into graphic detail about how he kills everybody. And there's so many more kills in the book than there is in the film. So like they toned it down to make Patrick Bateman's character, he's kind of like, is he the anti-hero or is he just a plain old villain? Because he, as much as he wants to belong with everybody, he hates them at the same point.
Yeah.
So this film is set in the late 1980s and we have a 27-year-old Wall Streeter called Patrick Bateman and he travels among a closed network of proverbial beautiful people that close network in only the way that they're able to allow others like themselves in with a feeling of superiority. Patrick has a routine morning regimen to maintain his appearance of attractiveness and fitness. He, like those in his network, are vain, narcissistic, egomaniacal and competitive, always having to one up everyone else in the presentation of oneself. But he, unlike the others, realizes that for himself, all of these are masks to hide what is truly underneath, someone or something inhuman in nature. In other words, he is comprised of a shell resembling a human that contains only greed and disgust. Greed in wanting what others may have, and disgust for those who do not meet his expectations, and for himself in not being the first or the best. That disgust ends up manifesting itself in wanting to rid the world of those people, he not seeing them as people, but only as those characteristics he wants to rid. So it kind of starts out where he's like, you just see where they do a lot of dinners, and it's like wanting to go to the best upcoming restaurants, and they talk about like, oh, the Syrian crisis at the time. But like, Patrick Bateman wants to talk about, oh, well, if you're going to talk about that, then we need to talk about the Cold War still, and world hunger and homelessness issues and all that sort of stuff. Like, it's like, he's like saying, he's using like little tidbits of information he's picked up from the news. Like, they only talk about it on the surface level. Like, they don't know what's going on, like what the crises are. But he's like, I know more about the world that's fucked up than you do. Like, everything, it's that person at work that has to be seen to know more than you do.
Yeah.
And this is what Patrick,
we all know them.
Yeah. I'm worried sometimes I am that person.
I worry sometimes I could be that person too.
Okay, well, I'm not alone. No, it's like, what was it? His Jared Leto plays the character of the, what's it? Paul Allen, that's the name. Yeah. So Paul Allen is basically Patrick Bateman's, in his own mind, his enemy. And that's all because Paul can get into a restaurant that Patrick can't. Some high-end one, and he's like, oh, you just gotta know this person and that person, whatever. And like, they're just, it is so funny just hearing the way that they talk about it. They're so misogynistic. They're so, like, they're just assholes. And I'm sure anybody who, like, lives and works in New York is like, I could pick 10 of them just going out for breakfast. Because the thing is that even though it's set in '80s, now filmed in 2000, you still get that now. Because, like, the funny thing is that you've got, like, I can't remember what clothes designer, but he was doing like a Patrick Bateman-esque for his suits, where you could look like him and dress like him. They have people doing his workout routines, his diet, his beauty regimen. These are all on websites for men. For you to get that look, he's still really popular. Like, this film, like I said, it wasn't, because it was so scandalous, really, in its depiction, that it kind of did, it did well. It was on a budget of $7 million. And it sold for, or it got $34 million, which was, you know, really, it was good profit for the film. But it became a cult classic over the years. And the reason why the budget was, like, Christian Bale was only an upcoming actor. Like, he had done, obviously, like, a few films when he was younger, but he wanted this film so much. He rang all the other actors, like Leonardo DiCaprio, Ewan McGregor, a few other guys who were up for this film. He rang them himself, and he was like, you don't want to do it. You don't want to do it. This is going to be suicide for your career, especially for, like, Leonardo DiCaprio, because he was such a teen heartthrob at the time, still, like, after The Beach and Titanic and all that sort of stuff. They're like, don't be in this film. This could be terrible for you. But like, he spent like 3 months working out for this film just to get the physique, because there's a huge majority of it where Patrick is either nude in his boxers or like shorts or just topless. So like, they use a lot, because he loves himself. Like, when he's having sex with, I think it's his mistress, he's looking at a mirror. He's looking at himself in a mirror. He's doing a threesome. He records it. Like, everything is for himself. It's what he wants out of it. But it's just, it's also so, it's such a funny film where, like, towards the end, he admits his wrongdoing to his lawyer, who thinks it's a joke. People either, he's so rich and he's doing everything in the capitalistic and commercial side of life. He's doing everything that he should be doing. He's got a lovely fiance played by Reese Witherspoon. He's got his mistresses. He takes on prostitutes. Like, none of this is, they bat an eyelid at. And of course, nobody knows what he's doing in his nightlife. And he's doing everything he needs to be doing at work. And also, people, I think, are just mishearing him. There's a hilarious scene in the nightclub when he's talking to some women, and he he's, you know, she's like, what are you into? And he goes, oh, mainly murders and executions. And then she goes, oh, and do you like it? And he starts to get really interested. He's like, someone's actually wants to talk to me about this. And he goes, well, how do you mean? And she goes, oh, well, I've met a lot of guys who are into that, and they're really bored with mergers and acquisitions. They hate that job. And he's just like, like, he wants, it starts to build up in him. He wants to, like, tell people about it. And then, like, there's also a funny scene where towards the end, he starts to, his reality and his fantasies are really kind of going off kilter, where an ATM tells him to put a kitten into, to feed it a kitten.
Yeah.
And you're just like, this can't be real. So you just realize he starts, towards the end, he fantastically goes off the deep end. And so towards the end, like I said, I'm not going to say, but you're not 100% sure what happened, if it did, if it was just a fantasy. Okay. He was living, yeah. And it's now, it's long, it's a decent film, but it is so worth it, because you will hate the men in it, and the women are just so, like, 2D. But at the same time, it's like, some people say, because it, like, had a female director and a female writer, that it's a feminist film. And I'm like, only if you can look at it in the sense of, it's a black comedy taking the piss out of these type of men. You must, yeah, always know that in the heart of it. And, like, there's a really famous scene where they're all, like, it's like comparing their dicks. They're comparing their business cards.
Yes. It's so funny, because everything you say, I'm like, yes. And I'm like, I still haven't seen it. I totally know what you're talking about.
Yeah, there's, but, like, there's, this film is,
know for, this film.
Yes, it's like, it's really come on over the years. It's really, like, it's so quotable
and, yeah, like, memes and stuff like that.
Oh yeah.
I always kind of felt, because that, like, the main guy in this, like, he is the good-looking guy, you know, he is the charming guy. Yeah. I always thought that this was almost like what Ted Bundy.
Yes, yes.
Was, like, you know, the way they always said he was so good looking and so charismatic,
so,
and all
charming,
this,
that they couldn't think, how could he be the person doing, yeah, all this?
And you look at him and you go,
so Christian Slater, when he was basing his portrayal,
felt like this was almost kind of what I imagined Ted Bundy would have been like.
Yeah, where you could work alongside him and not doubt that, not, like, even think for a second that he's murdering people in his spare time.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Christian Bale based it on, he had came across in 1997 David Letterman interview of Tom Cruise. Mm-hmm. And he said it kind of unnerved him how Tom Cruise was extremely jovial, like, really happy and chatty, but dead behind the eyes. And he said, so that's it, like, he'll be, like, smiling and talking to people, and the minute he turns away, his smile just drops. And he also based his eccentricities side of his character on Nicolas Cage in one of my favorite films ever, of Vampire's Kiss. And, like, of how he treats his secretary, how he treats the women around him. And especially as he starts to go off the deep end, just like with Nicolas Cage's character. And I'm like, that's beautiful. When I found that out, I'm like, I can really see that. So, yeah, it's just, like, it's such a good film. But, like I said about the budget, it was, like, Christian Bale wanted, like, next to nothing for this. He so desperately wanted this to be his film. And, but they have, like, he talks about the latest Genesis film with Phil, finish it off for me, Grace. What's his name? He's the drummer of Genesis, Phil.
Collins?
Phil Collins, thank you. But anyway, yeah, so he talks about them. There's Huey Lewis in the news. Yay! And Whitney Houston. So they're the three, and they play their songs. Like, he goes into, like, a long spiel about these musicians and their songs before he kills people in three different scenes. And the reason why the budget was high was for copyright on songs. However, Whitney Houston forbade them from playing any of her songs in that film. So, like, there's so much about this film that's just, it's so good. Like I said, I may attempt to read the book, but I also might be, like, throwing it away halfway through, going, ah, God! Because this film is so, like, if you didn't know that it's, like, a dark comedy, you could on surface value be like, I can't watch this. This is terrible to women. It's terrible to homeless people. It's terrible to anyone who's not a rich white man.
Yeah. But I think wasn't that it? It was almost like just the fact that he thought that he was entitled to all of this.
He felt like he was God, like he could do whatever he wanted to because no one was stopping him.
It's like the definition of white male privilege.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. So, like I said, I purposely didn't really go too in-depth into it because like that there is, I think with a few, it could be, oh, it's on my list. It's on my, must watch it and then haven't. Like, I know it was out in 2000. We're at 2021 right now. So really, you know, should happen. But like these things happen where you just might not have gotten around to seeing it. Like I had watched it a few years ago, but like it's definitely a film that people could like rewatch. It actually turned, they did a Broadway version of it. And I'm like, that I would like to see.
I'd love to go see that.
Yeah. Yeah, it is just so good. Yeah, so I 100% recommend it. But I would definitely not recommend American Psycho 2, which was not meant to be American Psycho 2. Mila Kunis starred in it, and it was like one of her earliest films. And it was basically just meant to be a film about a woman killing people, but they just decided to tack on something at the start of the film to make it become like tie in with American Psycho, the first one. And she was like, no, that's not what I starred in and filmed the whole film of. They just decided to add something much later and then release that as American Psycho 2. And it's like, it's laughed at for even trying to be anything like the first. Yeah.
What a shame.
Yeah. So that was a random one that was totally unnecessary. But yeah, just watch the start because it holds up because like that, these men have not gone away.
No.
And I sincerely doubt they ever will.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. What greed and money will do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It can make a lot of people look in a lot of other directions.
Yeah. Shitty. From one guy who is kind of on top of the world in work-wise, you know, good job, good career, on a path, bit of a dick, to a bit of a rock bottom moment in career for my next one, which is Possession of Hannah Grace. Now, this is a lot more recent than any other movies that we've talked about. It's 2018. And it has the Pretty Little Liars alum. So this is actually her first leading role in a horror. And all of the other Pretty Little Liars actresses in the foursome have been in horrors as well, with Lucy Hale in Truth or Dare, Ashley Benson in Ratcher, and Tryon Bessalerano, I can't say her name at all, so I do apologize, in Martyrs. So this movie, it looks at a police officer. She has recently been let go, or she has recently left the police force. She has a bit of a addiction to medication, so to like prescription drugs. And she is taking that to the curb. She is no longer doing that. But a friend of hers is working in Boston Memorial Hospital. And a job has opened up in the morgue for the night shift. And her friend is getting her in there. And the friend is incredibly supportive and kind. And is like, look, I'll get you this job. We'll be able to work there, and then in the morning we'll go from there, we'll go to meetings together, like this is going to be the start of your new life, I've got you, babe. And I was like, yeah, queen. So Shay Mitchell goes in for this, she goes in for the interview for the job, and they're basically like, not many people stay in this job. It's kind of really lonely. You're dealing with dead bodies the whole time. Kind of creepy, and it smells really bad. And she's like, yeah, I used to be a police officer. I'll get used to the smell. And they're like, you'll never get used to the smell. It won't happen. guy in Fiona is kind of like, oh, your friend told me there were a couple of issues recently, and she's like, yeah, but I definitely have them under control, I'm okay. And he's like, okay, yeah, you start tomorrow essentially. And the whole thing is, she's going to be there for the night shift, she's on her own. But what you have to do is you fingerprint the bodies, you then take photos of them, you document any kind of injuries that they may have, and then you pop them into their like drawer. But the one thing is, you're not just getting them from the hospital, you're also getting them from like crime scenes and stuff. Now, I have massively forgotten to actually say how this movie opens up, and which would lead to the rest of the movie. But this movie opens up at an exorcism of a young girl. And it's like almost in a warehouse. And there is this like really shitty iron bed. There's a girl shackled to the bed. There's two priests and a dad. And they're like, we expel you from Hannah Grace. Leave, you know, out of her body. And she's all like, absolutely not. Speaking with Paul, she's my child. And she doesn't need anything but her mind to kill the two priests. She kind of almost like suffocates them, and they're like, you need to she just needs to die. So she actually, during the exorcism, does die. And then it goes to the whole morgue. And they're talking about her getting a new job. So it opens up with exorcism, not just that this girl needs a new job because she lost her previous one. So she comes in for the first shift, and all is okay. You know, it's a bit of a shit gig. You're taking in bodies. It's a shit gig if it's not a gig you want to be doing. So she's there on her own. There's two security guards. She goes in, and you can kind of tell that the security's a little bit lax, because she's like, hey, you need to see my ID. And your man's like, you work here? And she's like, yeah. And he's like, no, just go and do your job. And she's all like, oh, great, thanks, cheers for that. And then one of the other guys comes down, and while she's putting a body away, he's all like, booger, booger, booger. And she's like, don't be a dick. Like, don't play this. We don't play this game. That's fine. Her first night goes okay. She's all right. You can see that she has the pills in her bag. You don't know if she's going to be taking them, if she's not. She was going out with another police officer. That relationship is over. And then it comes to the next night. So she's in work, banging on the door. And there's this guy that she thinks is homeless. And he's like, well, there's this guy. And he turns around and he goes, I'm after forgetting my fob. Can you let me in? And she's like, no, who are you? And he's like, I work here, let me in, and starts banging on the door. And she rings up security. She's like, a guy just tried to get in here, it's all a bit sus, like, just keep an eye out. An ambulance comes, knock, like, the big alarm goes off, because of course you need a little bit of suspense and an alarm going off. You're like, oh, what the fuck? And it's just actually that they're putting in a body. So she goes, your man's partner has been, he called in sick, so he can't get the body in. And his phone's like, can you come out and give me a hand? And she's all like, I can't do that. And he's like, well, we're both going to lose our jobs because she's going to start decaying, blah, 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 blah. And she goes out, she helps. Your man sculpts in, the guy who was trying to get in. She sees the elevator door kind of closing. She's like, shit, did something go on there? But she's not quite sure. They bring the body in. She starts to do all the things. It's the girl who had been from the exorcism before. They had found her in an alley with a guy stabbing her. So they found the guy straight away, but he had run away, and they're under the impression that she has just been killed. She tries to take the fingerprints, they won't go into the system properly. Every time she takes the photograph, she it won't log onto the computer, so she can't actually like make any photographic evidence of any injuries that Hannah Grace has. She then logs into the police system under her ex-boyfriend's like code, and she realizes that Hannah Grace actually has burn eyes, and this body has blue, and that also Hannah Grace has been dead for 3 months.
Ooh.
And she's all like, what's going on here? She hears a couple of different sounds while she's in the bathroom. She checks the CCTV camera. You can kind of see something crawling along, but in fairness, you can't really make it out. So she goes up to her friend. She's like, look, I need to show you something. I know you're going to think I'm mad, but I genuinely think this girl started to breathe. And she's like, look, the doctor should have told you, like, dead bodies expel gases. And she was like, oh, in fairness, you probably thought that I would know that. And obviously that, you know, bodies don't breathe. But I just want to show you this. I think this, you can see this girl on the camera. And the friend is like, look, you can see something, but you can't tell what it is. And then she finds the guy, and there's this whole, like, you know, get away from me, blah, blah, blah. And your man's like, you need to kill her. You need to kill her. You need to burn her. You need to burn her. Like, you know, that's not a person. That's something else. And they get rid of him. He runs away. They don't actually get him into police custody. She's all shaken up, but she's fine. It was like, you know, she's a police officer, and she, like, was able to fight him off and everything.
Mm.
And then, like, people start to go missing within the morgue. And your one is crawling around. And the thing is, the more people she kills, the more she rejuvenates. So that was why she wasn't able to document any of the injuries, because then there would have been evidence that she was starting to rejuvenate. She's trying to tell people, look, there actually is a possessed person in the morgue. They're all like, you have a bit of an addiction, and actually I can see the pills that you stole here, not great, don't love it. And it's like, why do you have them? She's like, I just feel more comfortable with them there. I'm not going to take them. She's all like, take them away if you want. And friend is like, I trust you. If you're not going to take them, I trust that you're not going to take them. And I think, yes, friend, you're a good friend. So the whole thing plays out as you would imagine. There is a lot of killing, there's a lot of possession. Later on, she goes outside, your man comes back and he's all like, you need to tell her. And it turns out it's actually her dad. And he's like, look, the way you're going to defeat her is you're actually just going to have to burn her. So I think, in a way, it was a bit of a symbolic movie, because by burning this possessed person, she was, in a way, burning her own demons. And she was letting go of all of the things that happened before. Because what had happened on a job was, there was somebody, she didn't shoot, your man shot dead her partner. So she was all like, oh God, this is terrible, which it is. So actually, in fairness, she had two pretty shitty fucking work days going on there. Her partner dies, then she gets a new job, and possession lady goes after her.
Oh, really, just not the best start to it all.
Not the best start at all. But the thing is, I was kind of like, I don't know how she's gotten away with the fact that, like, a load of people are dead, and she's just going to be like, oh, it turns out actually it was the devil. It was the devil.
Isn't it always?
It's always the devil. Up, come on. But in fairness, she did actually catch your one on CCTV camera, so I was kind of like, okay, I'll let it go, I suppose.
So it got me there.
You got me. So it ends with her on a run, and she's like, I'm 59 days sober now and I feel really good. And I was like, oh, you expel those demons, bitch, metaphorically and physically. Boom, do your job. Yeah, employee of the month.
You live your best life now.
You live that best life. And actually, what I found out through my extensive research on IMDb was this was the first Sony Pictures film to be shot on a full-frame mirrorless camera. Sony said that the film was primarily shot on its own A75II consumer camera, which cost a mere $2,000. I must say, it was actually class. Like, I wouldn't have known it was on a camera of that kind of
price.
And the girl who played Hannah Grace, she was able to do, like, all these, like, really weird contortions without, like, CGI or prosthesis, because she was a dancer and a gymnast and a contortionist.
Oh, well, that does help. That comes in handy.
Yeah. And the exterior of the hospital is actually Boston City Hall. If you're in Boston and you want to go see it.
Ah.
Yeah. There you go. So that was her pretty shit day at work. Which
that is.
A pretty bad one.
It's up there. Yeah. You know, like you.
Great, like.
Yeah, I mean, we've all thought that we've had like a bad start, but like.
Mm. Yeah. I definitely recommend it. It was a, what I would say, our Saturday cartoon movie.
Yes.
I really like her. I really like these type of movies.
I think as well you'd like The Autopsy of Jane Doe.
Yes. Yeah. I'm definitely going to have a look at this. A look at that one. This one is on Netflix. The UK Netflix.
Oh, is it?
But yeah, it's on Netflix, so I was able to find it there. So yeah, I definitely would recommend it. It is a put your brain off.
Yes. No, that could be like a midweek movie where you just want something just to enjoy the time with. Nothing too heavy.
Nothing too heavy. Don't have to be like heavily invested. Kind of gave me a bit of, do you remember that one Angelina Jolie years ago? And I think it was it Morgan Freeman? And it was a Bone Collector?
Oh, it was Denzel Washington with her.
Yeah.
I love that film. I've watched it so many times.
Yeah. I thought it was kind of like that.
Okay. Yeah. Like just enough to keep you interested, but you don't have to be like glued to everything.
Absolutely. Like somebody's going to be like, it's nothing like that movie, but I don't mean like that is.
Yeah, I get what you mean.
It just had that feeling. Kind of had that lighting as well. I really liked that movie.
Mm-hmm.
So I would definitely recommend it.
Fantastic.
Not gonna blow your mind, but I really liked it.
Be pleasantly surprised.
Pleasantly surprised. Yeah. I was very happy with my two movies this week.
Yeah, I wanted to be more happier with Severance, but I'm just going to say on thinking of it, I know, no. But I mean, I adore American Psycho, so, you know, it made up for it. But yeah, no, you're too. Obviously, I've seen Aliens, but yeah, no, I think I'll definitely watch this film. It's good. Yeah. I tend to come away wanting to watch a film after this.
Yeah, it's just a bit of a cotton candy for the brain. That's not a phrase, but you know what I mean.
And all these films don't make me feel so bad about going back to work tomorrow.
Exactly. We're totally fine. Absolutely fine.
Yeah. So our 100 film that we're back on track for, we were doing An American Werewolf in London, which is just, again, I've seen this before, would totally watch it anytime. I love it. So the plot about this is two American college students are on a walking tour of Britain and are attacked by a werewolf. One is killed and the other is mauled. The werewolf is killed but reversed to its human form, and the local townspeople are unwilling to acknowledge its existence. The surviving student begins to have nightmares of hunting on 4 feet at first, but then finds that his friend and other recent victims appear to him, demanding that he commit suicide to release them from their curse, being trapped between worlds just because of their unnatural deaths. It's such a good film. And as well, I find that like it captures Yorkshire sentiment in pubs in like the 1980s.
Yes.
You're not from around here.
Oh, you're blowing.
Yeah. And it's just like, I love the name of the pub, like the Slaughtered Lamb. And it's just so, like stick to the road, don't go up the moors. And it's just, it's just such a great film. And even like great prosthetics, like on the use of the friend who keeps coming back to him, like throughout the stages after he's been killed. Oh, it's a phenomenal film. If you haven't seen it, totally watch it. I haven't seen the sequel, the one in Paris. Actually. Yes. And you know, like it's one of those ones where sometimes I'm afraid to watch a sequel if the first film was so good.
Yeah. No, I get that. You don't want to think it, but we should do it.
But at the same time, I was telling you to go watch Aliens, so American Werewolf in Paris could be great as well.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully. Yes. I've heard good things. Yeah, this would be, I watched this for a werewolf episode and I loved it. Thought it was really good.
Yeah.
It's bananas. It's absolutely fucking bananas. It's like bonkers, but it's good.
Yeah, like the dream scene is, and then it's like a dream, and then, oh, it's still another dream.
Like, just falls, him and his nurse fall in love, like, straight away. I'm like, no. But look.
Also, I sincerely doubt a nurse is going to, like, take a patient back home to live with her.
Isn't it? It's wild.
And have the most drawn-out sex scene possibly ever in a regular film I watched. In, like, a horror film. It's just, oh.
I love it. So good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I definitely recommend that one.
That's it. So we're going to be taking a bit of a change in next week's episode. We're going to try something new in the sense where we look at some really dark, twisted people from history. And then we're also going to look into how they've been portrayed in movies. So it's just something different. It's not necessarily as movie focused as we are normally. So if people are interested in real bastards of history and fucked up people, definitely give us a listen next week.
Even if you're not, give it a listen.
Still give us a listen, goddammit.
You might become interested.
Yes, it's you can sit back and relax and be like, God, I'm glad I didn't live when that happened.
Who wants to live in the 1400s? Fucking no one.
No, thank you.
No, thank you. Basically, this is a rule book of if you were able to go back to the future, avoid these times.
Yeah, it's like everyone who's like, I'd love to go back. I was listening to a podcast there today and some woman was like, I'd love to have gone back just to see how, because, you know, like history is normally written of like wealthy people because they can afford to have their histories written. And then they're like, I'd love to be like, know what it's like to be a normal woman in like 16th century France or whatever. I'm like, bitch, you'd be working on a farm or you'd be a prostitute. I was like, you couldn't fucking pay me to go back in time. We're just starting to eke out an existence now in the last like 50 years.
I don't want to go to my very cushy job tomorrow, just more for the fact that I don't want to get out of bed.
Yeah.
I'm very, very thankful that we live now and where we.
Yes. So definitely, yeah. When like people are like, you want to travel back in time, I'm like, not as a woman, you don't.
No, thank you. Make sure to give us a follow on Instagram because you're home with an underscore in between each word.
And you can listen to us on most podcast platforms. And if you listen to us on Spotify, we would very much so like if you could rate our podcast. If you listen to us on Apple, give us a rate and review. All these things really help us get ourselves out there. And if you don't want to do any of that, we still recommend that you go tell a friend about this lovely two girls who are chatting into your earbuds.
Yay!
Yay!
And we will talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye now. Goodbye.